May it please the court.
Morning.
Good morning, sir. My John Carr for the appellant defendant below. Your Honors, the probably most insightful element in the district court's attempt to comply with the Dobert requirements can be found in his reluctance to develop the Dobert analysis of science and the appropriateness of those who spoke for the science in this particular case. The trial court stated at one point in rejecting the appearance of the psychiatrist, stated that the experts in this case could do little more for the jury to understand the particular defense, namely the absence of mens rea, than the non-experts, seven of whom testified in the case about this man walking into walls and leaving the gas pump in his gas tank, that the experts could do little more than the lay people to explain to the jury the subject of this defense, namely the defense that this man could not develop a specific intent to commit these crimes. Now, the predisposition of the trial court to treat this as a case in which only a psychiatrist or a psychologist could provide the appropriate basis for the claim is additional insight into how the judge approached this. He did not approach it, as Dobert requires, as an analysis of the particular science involved first, and then as to the appropriateness of the people who spoke for it, the various experts. The principal expert in this case was, of course, a neurophysiologist who ran a laboratory, runs a laboratory, in something called translational neuroscience at the University of Arkansas, and is one of the most knowledgeable and distinguished people in the science of neuroscience in the country. Backed up by another distinguished, actually the inventor of the so-called PET scan from the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, who testified that there were holes in the defendant's brain. That is to say, he characterized them as little rat bites. When there is damage to the brain, he testified, it tends to block the glucose that goes into the brain, kills the brain tissue, leaving these little holes that you can actually see through his PET scan, and causes cortical damage. There was no uncertainty about his, in fact, the trial court asked him, what do you mean by cortical damage? And he gave a definition which fits perfectly the theory in this case. I don't mean to burden you with reading it, but it is a clear statement of what was at stake in this case. He was asked by the judge, what do you mean by cortical deficiency? Could you define, if you haven't already, said the trial court, what cortical dysfunction is, what it means? And he said, cortical dysfunction means that you're not going to be functioning at the level that is considered normal. Your memory will be impaired. You're not going to be motivated. Your logic may not be there. All the highest functions that make us, especially in this sophisticated society, to function cannot be done by someone who has significant loss of cortical dysfunction, which is the case in this particular study. He defined the science, that is to say, how this affects the human brain. Dr. Horton, who is the current president or was the current president of the National Association of Neuropsychologists, found this particular individual to be suffering from dementia and to have all of the trappings of somebody whose brain has gone dead. For example, Dr. Horton said his IQ had dropped like 20 points to a marginal level in the low 90s by the time he examined him, that his straight A's in college had diminished.
Is Dr. Horton a medical doctor?
No, sir, he is not. He's a psychologist. He's
an. Going to make the diagnosis?
Well, sure. I mean, that's his business. That's the science, Your Honor. That is the science of this neuroscience. That's indeed, that's exactly where the trial court went. It said, we need to have a medical doctor to make this diagnosis. Well, that's not what.
Medical diagnosis.
Well, it's not a medical diagnosis. It's an explanation of what went wrong, physically wrong, physiologically wrong, with this man's brain. I mean, there. In fact, the court, trial court, and the witness, Dr. Alavi from Philadelphia, got into this discussion about punctuates. That's what the scientist called it. These little holes in the brain. And indeed, they agreed on the word puncture, holes in the brain. So it's not, it has a psychological effect, of course, but that's not what the scientists were addressing.
This was based on the taking of the PET scan?
Yes, Your Honor.
When was it taken?
Oh, it was taken in.
What year?
No, in 2004. That's right.
Well, there's no, and so he's incapable, this expert, of testifying about anything before 2004, right?
Well, he's incapable of saying that he took a test before 2004, but he's not
incapable of knowing whether the holes in the brain were there when this scheme began.
He did say this. He did say that he found an old infarct, which he dated back to, he described what these temporary ischemic attacks are, Dr. Alavi did. And said that in addition to the obvious things that came from his strokes, he dated back an old infarct. Now, he dated it back to sometime in the mid-90s. He couldn't obviously be precise about
what
it.
What was that based on?
Based on what he saw.
Oh, when you say an old infarct, what does that mean?
That means that it's older than the ones that he was talking
about. Was there a PET scan? What was he analyzing to determine that there was an old infarct?
He was analyzing the PET scan, PET scan in 2004.
How did he know what year the old infarct took place?
He didn't know he couldn't place it to a year for sure, but what he could do was to say it's much older than these and his history, that is to say the defendant's history, of these temporary ischemic infarcts, TIAs, temporary ischemic attacks or whatever. These were the ones that he based a lot of his judgment on. This guy had been having these attacks over the years.
Well, he couldn't testify to that, could he?
Well, he was testifying that the patient told him that he'd had these attacks over the years, and he did have some material. He had an old CAT scan that had been done, I think, 96 or 97. So he did have actual data beyond just the patient's self-reporting. But of course, any patient's self-reporting is the basis for any psychiatric or psychological.
Do you agree that we're reviewing the district judge here for abuse of discretion?
Yes, sir. So for abuse of discretion, because.
How would you make your argument about this specific issue in terms of that standard review? In other words, the district court may well have not abused his discretion by admitting this evidence, but why was it an abuse of discretion for him not to?
No, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Please try that. Just the question part, just the end of it. I didn't hear.
Why was it an abuse of discretion for the district court not to admit this evidence?
Because.
You think he should, and you argue that he should have.
He should have.
But our review was for abuse of discretion.
That's right. And the abuse of discretion is not doing what Dobert said you have to do, and that is to apply this four-part, five-part test to the quality of the science, making that determination first. He didn't do that. He walked into this issue saying, you need a psychiatrist or you need a psychologist. Those are the only people who can explain the science.
When did anyone attest to the validity and the reliability of the science?
Oh, but all three of them did. All three of them went through the tests. I mean, that's in their testimony is in the appendix. All three of them actually went through seriatim. Alavi first, Horton second, and Garcia Rowe third. And what they did, Your Honor, was to set up the ability of the trial court to do what we say the trial court didn't do and what amounted to an abuse of discretion, namely, to examine the science. He didn't examine the science. What he said was, I'm just going to find, and he says that, incidentally, in the May 2006 opinion he wrote, which is cited in the briefs in rejecting our motion for release on pending appeal. I see my red light is on.
Yes.
Good. Thank you. Okay.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Sarah Chasson on behalf of the United States.
Good morning.
The District Court correctly exercised its discretion when it decided to exclude the testimony of Dr. Garcia-Rill and Dr. Spodak. It is incorrect to assert that
Can I just hold for one second? The only person I've heard him speak about is Horton.
Yes, which
he didn't say anything about either of the other two. So I guess I had the impression that the Horton issue wasn't directly before us.
That is correct. That is the government's view
Could
as well.
Could you explain why that is?
In the District Court, the appellant represented to the district court, and the district court accepted this as the operating presumption, that Mr. Day's mental health defense depended entirely upon the intertwined relationship of his three medical experts' testimony. Dr. Alavi to show in a dynamic, tangible kind of way the damage to the brain through the PET scan, Dr. Horton to show the contemporaneous performance of Mr. Day on psychological tests, and then the testimony of either Dr. Garcia-Rill or Dr. Spodak to demonstrate why that showed that Mr. Day was incapable of deceiving and carrying out a fraud scheme.
So did he agree below that if Rill was excluded, that Horton wouldn't be able to be admitted?
Yes, he did, and the cites to that are in the government's brief. There was always this understanding that the three of them were required, and without the testimony of Dr. Garcia-Rill or Dr. Spodak, neither Dr. Horton Dr. Alavi were relevant.
You want to talk about forfeiture?
I would. The district court was wrong in its application of the forfeiture laws. 28 U.S.C. Section 2461C permits the forfeiture of general mail and wire fraud. That is now a reasoning and analysis that has been endorsed by four other circuit courts, the 3rd, the 8th, the 7th, and the 11th. And it is also the government's position that it is consistent with the plain meaning of the forfeiture statutes. Additionally, the government is entitled to a money judgment in the amount of the proceeds of the fraud scheme, both to punish Mr. Day and to separate him from the profits. And as we relate in our pleadings, the government's analysis and its entitlement to a money judgment has also been accepted by eight of 11 circuit courts. Every circuit court that has considered the issue has concluded that the forfeiture laws do in fact entitle the government to receipt of a forfeiture order in the form of a money judgment. And most recently, the Third Circuit, in the case of Vampire Nation, has concluded that that applies with equal force to the proceeds of a mail fraud scheme.
Is there any circuit that's gone against the government's position on either of the two issues?
No. The silence of the other circuits is merely because they have not considered it. And it makes sense, turning to Section 28 U.S.C. 2461C, as we discuss in our pleadings, the entire purpose of the amendment to the CAFRA Act was to permit the government to forfeit the proceeds of general mail and wire fraud. And Congress did so in an explicit way by entitling the government to proceed via criminal forfeiture for any crime that was for which civil forfeiture was expressly permitted under 981A1C. And as one follows the reasoning, the language of the statute, it's clear that general mail and general wire fraud are civil statutes for which criminal forfeiture is generally available. And because 28 U.S.C. 2461C operates as a bridging statute, it is appropriate to permit the government to plead and obtain criminal forfeiture in a criminal case. With regard to the money judgment, we would note that not only has every eight circuit courts held that it is appropriate for the government to obtain a money judgment, but it's appropriate with the policy interests behind the forfeiture statute to entitle the government to obtain this relief. It's particularly the case in a circumstance such as here, where there are no other meaningful assets that the government can attach. A money judgment is the only way that the government will be able to, in the future, recoup the proceeds of Mr. Day's fraud, absent any other assets being located post-conviction. And we don't expect that to be likely in this case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Does Mr. Clardine tell me? Why don't you take 2 or 3 minutes and talk about forfeiture? And if you would you start by explaining to me how, under your view of 2461, the law is any different than it was before 2000? In other words, under your theory, government can only get criminal forfeiture if a financial institution is involved, right?
That's right.
And that was the law pre-2000.
It is.
But yet Congress in 2000 sought to expand the availability of criminal forfeiture, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So your theory is Congress didn't succeed?
Well, our theory was that it is more logical to separate the idea of restitution.
Well, Congress didn't succeed, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Right. I would add one footnote to this inquiry, Your Honor, and that is that it is purely a matter of academic concern, because there are three different claimants on the only piece of property worth anything against this defendant. We made this argument to the district court. The district court agreed with us, and that's the argument we make here, and I would submit on the brief, but there really is no material thing. I would like to answer one of the questions raised by Judge Garland, if I may have just 30 seconds to do it.
Okay.
And that is that I didn't mean to focus on Dr. Horton. I meant to focus on Dr. Garcia Rill, because he was the neurophysiologist who actually had to connect. Horton did indeed make a diagnosis, and that diagnosis was dementia. But what he was doing was he was explaining the findings of his examinations, and
so you did agree below that Horton would not be able to go on unless
sure because he was one of the pegs on the tower. And indeed, it wasn't until after Dr. Garcia Rill was rejected that we got the psychiatrist, because the judge
said
he wanted the psychiatrist.
Okay.
And that's where we find the abuse of discretion. Thanks for the extra time. I do appreciate it.
Thank you. Case is submitted.